I'm Gwen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
And I'm a basket. I am just, I don't know what else could be said here today than what's already been said. It's been, there is a spirit in this place, and I'm so touched. I don't know if I can say anything, y'all. I really don't. This Nancy, you may have to do this. After all, I kept threatening her with that. I said, well, the way I said, if they don't sing, I'm not speaking. I was here yesterday, and it was so unexpected and so filling. I don't know when I've experienced anything like that, and I was really counting on that today, and the morning has been wonderful. It truly has, and I appreciate the opportunity to do this. I'm not a speaker, as you will see, but I kept telling myself this would be different this time, because normally when I tell my story, I take up the whole time with that story stuff. And by the time I get to the good part, it's time for me to sit down. And since I thought, you know, I was given the topic of spirituality this morning, I thought, well, you know, this will be all about the good part. And if I can just remember it that way, because this is the good part. This is the part of my life that today is the true reality of my life. And if there's any way that I can impart that or just really somehow make you understand about my miracle, maybe you'll know that it can be your miracle too. And that's what I would like to try to do. I think alcoholics are by and large the most spiritual people I have ever met. We're all seeking. And I once read some meditation book that I had that said every time an alcoholic takes a drink, they're trying to go home. Speaking of a spiritual home, a place that's better. And I really identified with that, because that's where I was trying to go every time I drank. Lynn, who spoke yesterday morning, talked about trying to get to that place where she had been once when she drank. And Lynn is my sponsor. And I, of course, identify with a lot of the things she says, but I think about that, trying to be in a different place, trying to get connected in a different way, trying to feel okay about who I am and where I am. And that's what I did when I drank. And lo and behold, who would have ever thought I could have gotten there by not drinking, because drinking was my solution. But alcoholics are spiritual people. And this is where I've learned about God and about a God of my understanding. I can remember when I was a little kid, we had some woods behind our house, and I liked to go play in those woods. And you know how sometimes sunlight will stream through the trees or the limbs or whatever, but you'll see a shaft of light coming down. And when I was a little kid, I would always have to go stand in that light. And something about standing in that light made me feel safe and connected to something. And I didn't know what it was, but that's what I've always been looking for. Now, either that says I was obsessive compulsive even then, or I was starting to seek. But I got off track in that seeking. I used to do a lot of reading the Bible and drinking bourbon at the same time. And somehow I felt like that the bourbon cleared my mind, and I could, like Lynn was talking about yesterday, I was the late night drinker. I loved to drink all night, late at night, by myself. And somehow I thought it made it okay if you had a Bible there while you did it. And I joined this Bible study group one time, and it was very structured. And there was a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things. And every week they handed you this list of questions, and you had to go home and figure out the answers, and there was a right answer. There was none of this stuff about the God of your understanding. It was the God of their understanding, and you had to figure out what the answer was. And I would sit there with my bourbon and my questions and a pencil, and I'd go, I don't get it. I don't get it. And so finally I would close the Bible and just drink. And that somehow that made me feel I could get to where maybe these people appeared to be, but I couldn't get there the way they were doing it. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, the spirituality I heard about here, when I heard about God being mentioned, that I didn't have the problem that a lot of people have of a God thing. I believed in God. I just did not believe in a power greater than myself. I did not know what that was about. I did not know what a personal higher power was. So when I hit that second step about came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, it was very hard for me. I knew I was insane. I knew I was suicidal. I knew all the things I was hearing about were true. But this power greater than me, because I thought that I had been in control for so long. Of course, it was an illusion like everything else, but I thought I had been in control. The fact that I was sitting in a closet with a loaded gun and trying to get the courage to pull the trigger, going to the grocery store and buying only the food that the other people in my family liked, because I wasn't going to buy anything I liked because I was getting ready to kill myself, so what would be the point, you know? And I would think that was a very sad thing, and I'd start crying in Kroger, and it was a controlled life, and everything was fine. So coming to believe in this power that was greater than myself, and looking back, I don't know how it happened. I can't tell you how it happened. I know I kept coming back. I know that I kept talking to other alcoholics, that I had a sponsor who very patiently kept showing me the way, made suggestions. Get on your knees every morning and every night. Keep it simple. Someone handed me the little 24-hour day book, and I started to read it. Somebody else would tell me, this is what I have tried. This is the way I ask God to keep me sober. I picked up those things from each of you. And little by little by little, it started to grow. And when I got to the third step, and don't worry, I'm not going through all the steps, but that part about, you know, if I'm going to turn my will and my life over to the care of this God, it occurred to me that my problem was that I didn't know who this God was. Who was I going to, you know, it's the guy in the sky and all of that kind of stuff, but, you know, how could I turn my will and my life, which was explained to me as my thoughts and my actions, how was I going to turn that over if I didn't know to who or what I was going to turn it over? And I think that is when the journey really started for me. Now, I've been on some tangents, y'all, I will have to say. At the beginning, it was all the conference-approved literature and all of that, but I have been out there on some tangents. I have been to the mountaintop, and I've gotten in a lot of trouble sometimes because I will get in love with the seeking at times and lose sight of what the goal is. But, you know, every time I've even gone off on these tangents, I've learned something. I have found one thing, that no matter where I've gone in this journey, there's always a reward at whatever level. So when something that started out as merely just getting on my knees every morning and asking God to help me not take a drink has turned into, at times, the most meaningful, wonderful, joyous experience of my life. But how it went from there to there, I can't tell you, except that it was millions of tiny little steps in learning to do certain things that I was told by you all every single day. Doesn't make sense, but it has happened. I have learned that for me, what works is that the thing we hear about, first things first, when we first come here. And for me, in the beginning, that meant first things first. I went to a meeting every day, and I was in a position at that time where I could go to morning meetings, and I got sober at the Clarkson 12-step group at the 10 a.m. meetings, and every morning I was there. And that's what started the discipline of learning to do something, put first things first. What's going to be first today? And it's going to be that meeting. Before that, it was going to get on my knees and talk to another alcoholic. And that's where I started learning what it meant to pursue something each and every day. And then I started hearing about people talking about meditation and prayer and so forth. So I bought lots of books, loved to buy those books, and I still do it. And I read about all kinds of meditation, all kinds of prayer. I had this one meditation book that told you, it was very specific, and I liked guidelines. Once I got here and learned about the steps, and it was a blueprint, I like that. I just really like that. So in this one meditation book that told you you had to lie down on something flat, you had to put your right foot on the floor, and you had to put your right arm on the wall. And it was something about letting the spirit flow from above and down your leg into the earth and all this kind of stuff. So I'd have to get all positions right, you know. And by the time I did all this, and I have to look back at the book, and, you know, you don't really get a real good connection here. And but I did these things. And but even more important was what I learned that didn't sit with me. And I found out that I had... it was all right for me to choose. This feels true to me, or this doesn't feel true for me. And it was just, hundreds of these little experiences. So what it has boiled down to today is that, first thing, every day, I have to get quiet. I have to be quiet. And it's not so much prayer, and it's not so much meditation, is I have to be still and know about the presence of God. And then I do pray. And I do meditate, but I'm sure it wouldn't pass the test of any Zen master or anything like that. But it's my meditation. It's how I listen. But that has to be first, and it has to be every day. And I know that. I know for me to have any kind of meaningful, useful sobriety in my life, that is what I have to do every single day. And it has worked. It has worked. I feel that I now have a relationship with this higher power that is meaningful, that helps me be of service, that helps me stay sober and live a sober life. And, you know, all of that is well and good, to have this personal relationship. I work alone in my offices at home, so it's real easy for me to just, you know, it's just me and God, and here we go, trucking along and in that ducky, but every now and then the world comes in, you know, and if I, what does it mean for me to have this wonderful relationship with my higher power if I can't take it outside? So the second part of that conscious contact with God is that I have got to behave like a person who has a conscious contact with God. That's the tough part. I ask God every day for the grace to keep company with him during the day. And I ask for his guidance of my thoughts and my actions. I have this one prayer that says, God, I wish I had a brain and I could remember the wording, but what it says is that I pray that everyone that I meet and that I think about today will be blessed by my actions and my thoughts. And that really is important to me, because I can act a certain way and my thoughts can just be murdering. And sooner or later, those thoughts are going to play out. So I ask for help with my thinking on a daily basis. And I have to behave like a person who has a conscious relationship with God. And I would say one of the largest issues is that has played out in my life. Well, actually, there are two main areas that I can say that I have had as arenas for practicing and learning the spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one is in work, and the other is in relationships. And it's been tough. It has really been tough. I'm very sensitive. I'm very delicate, like Donna was mentioning. I have lots of feelings all out here, all over on the outside. And I'm sure this is why I've ended up working alone, you know, because it's a lot easier that way for someone as delicate as myself. But even at that, I have customers, and I have people that I have to deal with on a daily basis. I have sponsees. I have sponsors. And I can't just stay hidden, and I don't think that's what God has in store for any of us. We didn't get sober to hide under a rock, and I think if we've gotten any light at all, we have a responsibility to try to shine it and to pass it on. So That is what I'm trying to do, but sometimes I get in my own way, and it's tough. But as far as relationships go, this area of forgiveness has been a huge one for me. And I was told early on that it was something that I was going to have to deal with if I was going to be able to stay sober, because I was a victim supreme, and I had a list and list and list of all the ways that I had been harmed, which my first fourth step went into in great detail. And the issue was not how I had been harmed, but was I going to learn to forgive so that I could forgive myself. And I would say that has been one of the greatest spiritual gifts of this program, because it finally dawned on me after I cannot tell you how many inventories I had done on relationships. And I am married. I have been married to the same person for be 30 years this year. And thank you. 20 of those years were drinking, and on both our parts. And I wouldn't call it a marriage. I would call it a coexistence of two very sick people, that if either one of which had been just a little bit well, they would have gotten the hell out of Dodge. It's just, we stayed there because it was easier to do. And he went on with his drinking life, and I went on with my drinking life. And there was a lot of water under that bridge, a whole lot of water under that bridge. And to be able to learn about the spiritual gift of forgiveness was one of the greatest things that's happened to me in this program. I finally learned that what someone else, I perceived, that someone else did to me actually had nothing to do with me and everything to do with them. But my forgiveness of them had everything to do with me and nothing to do with them. And it was such a revelation, because other people's behavior is what they do. It's not done at me. It's not done to me, even though I would like to take everything that personally. But by the grace of God, they can get forgiveness, and I should be able to forgive too. And it was somehow, it was one of those light bulbs that we get in this program, and it has been a real gift to me. And this year, we're actually going to have a celebration we're planning. And Nancy and I were talking about this coming up. We're actually going to celebrate these 30 years. I would be more inclined to celebrate the last 10 or so, but, you know, it's a package, so it's a package deal, and we're going to have a celebration, and that's a real gift. The other area is in the area of work. By profession, I'm an artist, and I used to love to drink and paint. And that was one of the things I did late at night, was I would drink and paint all night long. And at one point there I decided, and I got very angry about it because I was not rich and famous, so I put the painting aside and just drank. And that's when I think my drinking really started in earnest, all night long, every night. But I put it down for a very long time and went into other jobs. And I'm not going to get into all of that, because that's another drunk story. But when I got sober, my sponsor encouraged me to try to go back to what it was, the gifts that I had. And I was very afraid of that. I didn't know how. I didn't know what to do. And so I guess I was about 18 months sober, and I decided that I would go down to the Atlanta College of Art, because even though I was an artist and been practicing artist, I never had any training, so I thought I'd go down there and learn to do what I'd been pretending to do. And Nancy and I were talking about this too on the way up here. They promptly looked at what I did and said, "You can't do that anymore," tore me completely down, and started to build it back up. And that was a spiritual experience, because my ego, everything that I had ever thought was sort of taken away and stripped away, and it was a new surrender, actually. But the gifts of that have been tremendous. If any of you ever wonder, you know, can I really follow this voice that's in my heart? I'm here to tell you, you can. There is nothing, absolutely nothing, when God has given you a desire that He won't help you do. And it has worked that way for me in my life. There is one meditation, I use a lot of Emmett Fox's writings, and he talks a lot about practicing the presence of God. And I have learned to do that through relying on God and listening to the voice that comes through. And that voice a lot of times is this desire, this overwhelming, craving desire to produce something creative. And I believe that is God's voice speaking. And when that happens, it is now I know and I believe that it is God telling me, this is what you're supposed to do, and I will help you. And that was such a relief to me, because I didn't have to struggle. I could seem to do, you know, the next right thing, and God would take care of the results. And things started to happen. Doors started to open. And one, you know, things that I never even dreamed of doing, I would end up doing, and I'd say, where is this even going? Who knew? And then I'd turn around, and it would be a blessing. And that's how God works in my life today. For all of these things that if I will trust and take the next right step, turn out to be a blessing. I'll tell you one little story that's an example of that. And as I said, I work alone, and I have this little business that I produce home accessories and stuff. I put my artwork on any surface that'll hold it, actually. And sometimes I just feel like, well, where's all this stuff going? You know, it's falling off the end of the earth, and I start feeling sorry for myself, and I'll sit down and I'll mope a while, and maybe I was getting this wrong message from God. Maybe I ought to be out there selling encyclopedias again, and I could get drunk and sell a lot of encyclopedias, and this is, I don't know, you know, so one morning I was feeling that way, and who knows, you know, there's a fellow at Clarkston that says, you wake up in the morning and there's your alcoholism sitting on the bedpost looking at you, and that's how I feel some days, you know, that you wake up and there are the self-doubts. Where did they come from? They weren't here yesterday. So I was having a day like that, and I did the quiet time, and I did the prayer and meditation, and I was still feeling like, why am I even doing this? And my husband had left the television on, and the Today Show was on, and I got a cup of coffee, and I sat down in front of the TV, and I'm just kind of looking at it, and a commercial comes on, and in the background of the commercial is a piece of my artwork. And I went, I don't believe this. There it was on the TV screen. And where it had come from, who knows? I mean, somebody got a piece of it, and it was probably, and then my mind goes, it's probably in some salvage shop somewhere. And they were, you know, they had to decorate this set. But to me, it was like the voice of God. You know, it was kind of like, you're okay. You're still on the right track. See what I, and I just felt, you know, I'm there by myself. And I'm like, wow, nobody's going to believe this. And I called a couple of people, and they said, what commercial? And I went, I don't know. And well, what was it about? I don't know. And I was like, well, it was a kitchen. It was a kitchen scene, you know. And I've seen it one other time. It was during the evening news at night. And my husband was home that time. And I tell you, y'all, this is quick. It comes and it goes before anybody ever knows. And only I would even know it was there. But I screamed, there it is! And he turns around and goes, huh? Too late. So I'm still the only person that has ever seen this. Maybe it didn't even happen. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because today I get these little messages. And it is so cool, because I had no clue about this before. You know, I would find a certain high sometimes in a bottle But I never got messages on the TV, even when I was pregnant. So go figure, but I like it. I like it a whole lot. And it's little signs like that that just keep telling me you're on the right track. Just keep walking. That never would have happened if I hadn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that first person hadn't told me, get on your knees in the morning, get on your knees at night. Because there are miracles here. Don't leave before the miracle happens. And I kept coming back. And I can tell you, the miracle has happened. And I am living proof of that today. That I can share with other women alcoholics is a miracle. I was the most closed down, isolated person you would ever want to meet. And today, I love it, the fact that Nancy would ride up here with me. And we could really talk. We could really talk about things. We can laugh. I mean, you know, only in Alcoholics Anonymous did I learn to laugh and cry all in the same time, you know. And why does that feel so good in your gut? I don't know. But and yesterday, that experience of when the singing started and in the middle of it being so overwhelmed, I never had a high that good. I never had a high that good. And that is what this relationship with you all and the relationship with the God of my understanding has done in my life. It has made me able to love people and to be loved. It has made me able to love a man that I've been married to for 30 years to find out in the last year what it means to love another human being. I had no clue. No clue what it meant to love somebody without regarding how they felt about me, or if they were loving me enough or hard enough, or if they were doing none of that. Just seeing God's Spirit in another human being and loving that, because that's what it is God's Spirit. The joy of being aware of that and connected to that is more than I can even put into words. I learned it here. I learned it from the spiritual steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And not just the 11th step, because I have abused the 11th step from time to time with some of these tangents I have been on. But I always learn something. I always learn something, even if it's I shouldn't have spent my money on that one. But the other part of the joy is the fact that it is ongoing and it's not over yet. I used to think, I remember when I was 40 years old, I thought, this is it. Life is over. I have learned everything there is to learn. It's all crap. And the rest is enduring. And the only way I knew to endure was to drink. To drink and endure through every single day. And Donna mentioned, you know, you said I wasted so much of my life. And that's the way I feel. And I don't even really like to sleep today, not because I'm up drinking, but because I feel like I've wasted so much time already. I don't want to waste any more of this. It's joyous, and it's special, and it's a gift. And that is what the spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. Thanks.